This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 26th of April, 2023. And market yesterday that finally made a move after being bottled up to the greatest degree, arguably, since late 2021. And the move was to the downside in the cash session. We saw essentially stock selling off all session and closing on the lows. Various attributions around this. I think one of the big things that seemed to spark a lot of negative energy was not just the First Republic story the day before, but the expectations component of the consumer confidence survey in the U.S. for April coming in below expectations, and we'll have some perspective on that. But then we backed up sharply, Peter, after the close with two giant mega caps reporting, Microsoft and Alphabet. The S&P still looks relatively heavy in terms of that bounce, not erasing the previous day's sell-off. But on the NASDAQ 100, that move was far more significant, obviously, with the weight of those two companies there.
Yeah, and we should not forget as well, John, if you look at the slide two, the industry group's performance there. Yesterday's performance, you can see that transportation was actually the worst industry group, and that's because of UBS's result. We have so many results to discuss today, so I won't talk about that later. So I'll just give the very short, brief summary here. And UBS reported basically what was a very,
UPS, yeah?
Yeah, UPS, sorry, yeah, UPS. Sorry. So the United Parcel Services, and they put out an outlook on the volume growth on parcels and also on the global volume in their logistics network that disappointed. And from a macro angle, and that was also what I wrote in my equity update yesterday, that's not very good because UBS is seen as sort of a beacon, the heart of the economy if you move things around. So that combined with the First Republic Bank, I think, what set the stage for a negative sentiment. And then, you, as you correctly said, the market is now attempting to do a bounce back because of the Microsoft and Google earnings, which, on the headline, were better than expected. There are some good and positive things. We'll talk about that later. But I think the market is getting a little bit more interesting here because we actually were able to break out of that range that we have been in for so long.
Yes, we'll see. Of course, status next couple of days. To what degree that range stays broken, that'll be the key technical aspect of this. And just for some perspective on why the consumer confidence expectations might be important, on slide three, I put together a little chart contrasting or sort of combining the the consumer confidence expectations, and I put in a three-month rolling average just so it's a little bit less spiky in the dark red there versus the unemployment rate. And you can see in all the previous cycles, you see a major and shift and lower in confidence. Here I've inverted it. So it's when confidence gets worse or expectations get worse, it goes up. And then at some point in the future, the unemployment rate is beginning to worsen as well. Question is this something the market gets really excited about this stuff? It prices in all these rate cuts, but what is the scale and time lag on this? Is this something that's going to be picking up significantly in the next 3 months or not until next year? That will be the question for the coming few months of data. And then as we roll into what's going on here in general, but also in the FX space and in the interest rate space, we saw a big dump in yields last two sessions, and we're seeing a sharply stronger dollar yesterday. Is this because we got bad news and that's bad, and that's, means we're heading into a weaker outlook? It's dollar liquidity is pinched. The dollar's rising on that front. The yen rising makes sense. Lower yields means stronger yen. Or is some of this related to the whole debt ceiling issue, which traditionally sees, ironically, treasuries bid up as a safe haven? It's very hard to tell. We have no new developments really on the debt ceiling front. However, we could get a vote as soon as today in the House on this Republican spending bill. It doesn't look like they have the votes, but they may move ahead with the vote anyway. So does that clear the woods on that to a degree? It's very difficult to separate what is moving what here. I think tactically, as long as we have this debt ceiling issue in the background. And unfortunately, because we get April tax revenues rolling in here, it gives the Treasury some more liquidity to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars. And that's why the early June timeframe is the earliest that this really becomes a severe pinch time for the debt ceiling issue. But looking broadly across the FX space, as you can see on slide four, you have a sharply stronger yen as indicated, and you can see something like euro yen, a big engulfing bearish reversal. However, we have a Bank of Japan meeting on Friday, lowest expectations there in just about a year, judging from the implied volatilities on 1 week dollar yen. So you know, if they don't deliver anything and risk sentiment remains stable, is the yen really going to rally here? So that's, of course, the next critical step for the yen. What's clear is the commodity dollars are weak. We have weak commodity prices. We've got copper still sucking wind after a big sell-off yesterday, or was it the day before? And then oil has been weak, even though there was a bit of a rebound. But that commodity dollar space quite weak here. What's your take on next steps for commodities?
Yeah, generally yesterday was very much a risk off day across the commodity space, perhaps with the exception of precious metals, which also underpin underline some of the risks that the market is currently worried about. But looking at copper, it broke the uptrend the other day, and as you can see, that basically triggered some fresh selling to the downside. It is a very popular metal right now because of the long term very supportive outlook. And that basically means when we have these corrections, then they can get a little bit violent. But we did managed to find support yesterday at that 382 level. That was the March low. Below that, we got 375 as well. And this morning, we're already trading back above 390. So it just, I think it's for now, it's just highlighting a market that remains range bound while we wait for the eventual break, which I still believe will be to the upside. Overall, industrial metals year to date remains under some pressure. You can see copper, tin, and steel are the only metals at this point trading up on the year. But generally looking for support to come in here.
Yeah, and that's in the commodity dollar space. That is one of the key things weighing on Aussie: the dip in iron ore prices, the weakness in copper, etc. We also got a weak Australian CPI data point overnight. That quarter-on-quarter trimmed mean, which is their core measure of note, coming in at 1.2% quarter-on-quarter versus 1.4 expected, 1.7 previous. So no support on shifting RBA expectations for the Australian dollar. And before I let you turn you loose on the rest of the commodity space, you helpfully put in a slide we're discussing earlier this morning. Stanley Druckenmiller, of course, noted trader and investor for George Soros back in the day, and a very clever fellow, to say the least, outweighing in at a conference on, you know, what he has a high conviction on and doesn't have a conviction on. And his only high conviction trade, he argues, is against the U.S. dollar in his fear of the way the U.S. policymakers are going to respond to the next round of economic weakness, I suppose, and the speed with which they reacted to the Silicon Valley Bank failure. He calls himself unnerved by that situation, and he doesn't like that the way the dollar has been quote-unquote weaponized over the past year. You can see some of these points on slide 5, by the way. Admittedly, he's always great at administering self-criticism. He says he largely missed the dollar rally last year, but of course, he wasn't selling it either. So it's just a figure of that stature has one high conviction trade on there, I think it's worth noting. And then on the just a final note on Druckenmiller's views, it was interesting to see his view that the recession risks being a rather hard one for the U.S. And he's shying away from these so-called old economy, small and mid-sized companies. So have a look at that article. It's on one of the prominent articles on FT, and you can see the points here again on slide 5. But back to you, Ola, on the commodities market. Crude oil is just as positive. It's essentially closed the gap. We can pretty much tick that box. So what are we looking for next here? I suppose it has to be the economic outlook and demand picture that has to be one of the critical aspects here.
Absolutely. We need to see some of these recent weakness in the refinery margins stabilize. And there are signs that that's starting to happen now in Europe and in Asia. If you look at the diesel margins, you can see them here on slide 7. We're still seeing some weakness in the US. And yesterday, the API ahead of today's EIA stock report said that they saw a rise in distillate stocks last week, so that's obviously not helping. But generally, we're looking for the economic data. We're looking for some of these margins to stabilize. And as you said, John, that box has now been ticked, so that should no longer really weigh on the market. So we really need to find support in this down towards this low 80 in the low 80 area in Brent. Otherwise, Yeah, you can see on the chart it could really trigger some fresh short selling momentum, and that's the reason why OPEC cut production early this month. So look out for OPEC if we start to break below 80. But at least it looks for now that we're finding some support here.
All right, we need to get back to the equity market, Peter. There's one or two companies of size reporting last night after the close. Obviously, Microsoft and Alphabet, but you also have Roche up. I suppose they were out reporting this morning.
Yeah, they were out reporting this morning in Europe, and revenue growth beat expectations, and they confirmed their 2023 outlook. And I think that was also the general takeaway from all the earnings that came yesterday, which I reported and wrote in my equity note that, you know, they're all confirming the outlook. It's not, they're not accelerating it, they're not lowering it. It's just what it is already. So we haven't really seen a change. But as I said to you, John, a lot of the companies, including you had McDonald's, you had Coca-Cola, you had PepsiCo, a lot of them yesterday, also Nestle, reporting organic revenue growth beyond what the market was expecting to. So to some extent, I'm sitting here as an equity guy watching the equity market with the feeling that companies are not really sending out the same signals as we are seeing in some parts of the macro landscape on the different indicators. So there is some disconnect there. And what it is, I don't know. But it's definitely something that is worth tracking. And then we, of course, today, there will be a focus on banks. You know, you had that 49% plunge in the First Republic Bank. You know, there's nervousness again. Could we see a flare up again in terms of banking?
They're looking at selling. I think it was basically one-to-one of their deposit drop. So
yeah.
They're looking to sell
$100 billion
in assets, which makes sense. When you lose $100 billion out the door, you have to get rid of those assets.
Exactly. And they're trying to, in order to get a good price for it, they want to toss into the deal whether these large banks are going to acquire the assets. They're going to toss in that they get preferred shares in First Republic Bank. So there's an equity upside on the remaining part of the balance sheet. Because if they don't give them, something a good bone to chew on, then they couldn't get good prices because it's basically an asset fire sale here. Microsoft and Alphabet, two major technology companies in the U.S., holding up the equity market. If we start with the most positive news first, Microsoft. So Microsoft shares were up almost 9% in extended trading. They beat on revenue. They did $2 billion more in revenue for the quarter than the market had expected. I think that's pretty sizable beat there, and earnings were much better than expected. It's really the cloud business, the Azure business, that is really on fire here. And they put out an outlook, 26 to 27% growth in their Azure business in the current quarter we're in, excluding currency effects. And this is the most important part of Microsoft's future. These are really good growth rates, I would say. They're also saying that they're increasing the capital expenditures, the CapEx, due to these AI bets. They're going to build more data centers, etc. And I know it's a different discussion, John, and it's not for this podcast, but I really find it intriguing. This, you know, can we ramp up electricity at benign cost? With all these heat pumps, electric vehicles, data centers, is there a physical limit at one point that could actually become a limit for these digital companies as well? We're going to find out in the future.
I just hope the AI runs on something other than Microsoft Windows. That'll save a lot of power.
Yeah, I have my daily frustrations over Microsoft software as well.
Maybe some Linux boxes would be a lot more efficient.
Yeah, and then Alphabet. So those shares were only up 1.5%. A little bit more, not disappointing, because they beat both on their revenue and earnings, but the revenue growth was quite low, and we had the conversation internally about that. I think we have to remember, when we talk about low growth right now, it was only 2.6% revenue growth for Alphabet. We have to keep in mind that when they closed the book in 2019 and they closed the book in 2022, then over that three-year period, they actually grew their revenue by 76%. So almost 25% annualized. And we have to remember that because of the pandemic, there was a huge front loading of online advertising and the move to the digital world. And that's always a hangover. And that's the period that they're working themselves through right now. On the positive note, two things. They're authorizing a $70 billion buyback program. The investors really like that one. And then there was the first quarterly profit in the cloud business. So from here on and going forward, the Google Cloud business will continue or will begin to add meaningfully to the overall operating income of the holding company.
And they're chasing, I suppose, Azure and Amazon Web Services from far from behind.
they are very far behind, actually. It's a tiny number three company right there.
Yeah, and I should may say that was a pretty dumb joke on the AI running on Windows, because my understanding is that it's really the GPUs that are the pinch point for the calculations related to that. And I believe somewhere in that Druckenmiller comments that I saw somewhere, if it wasn't an FT article, it was something else in the same context of the speech or interview he was giving. He was long of AMD and NVIDIA, which are the two big GPU makers that would be doing the AI crunching.
Exactly, and it's the exactly the same viewpoint that I have been touring with clients in Prague last week, because as we talked about, the gold rush in California in the 1840s and 50s, you had to sell the shovels to make money, not trying to dig for gold. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And if we move to slide 9 in today's slide deck, of course, the two U.S. earnings that are in focus today, Meta, after the U.S. market close. I think the guidance and the results we got from Alphabet and their YouTube advertising channel, the general advertising revenue that was a little bit better than expected, I think bodes pretty well for Meta. And then, but the investors were really hoping to see two things from Meta. They want to see in the outlook that all the job cuts that they have done will begin, you know, filter down to the operating income side of things. That's one. The second is they really want Mark Zuckerberg to become more realistic on this metaverse. It has been a complete, utter catastrophe. They should scale it down to, you know, something we do on an R&D basis. We're still tinkering with it, but we were too early. And they need to dial down the CapEx at this point. If they do that, I think actually the investors will begin to be even feeling, give the love to Meta shares. And then Boeing. Boeing is also reporting today in the primary session before the market opens, I think, and the revenue growth is expected at 25%, and a good operating income expected for the quarter. The aviation demand is certainly coming back, and I and Boeing, of course, they need to show that they're getting their things together, because there has been a very very tumultuous couple of years for them with the MAX airplane, etc.
All right, so let's roll forward to the macro calendar, and actually we have the Riksbank decision being announced here as we are recording the podcast, so I have a very rough live take on that. It's been interesting to see that although they hiked the 50 basis points, the vast majority were expecting 50 basis points. There was a minority looking for only 25, and they guided for a 25 basis point move in June or September. Perhaps that's seen as marginally dovish as being specific that only one quarter point move and in one of those months suggested not looking to do a full 50 basis points more. There is a negative reaction for the Swedish krona, which is already top of range or bottom of range. You're a stocky at the top of the range there. So that is being read as a bit negative for the krona. Otherwise, today we have the preliminary durable goods orders out of the U.S. In oil space, the Department of Energy's weekly crude stock report. And then the 5-year treasury auction after a strong 2-year auction yesterday.
Yeah, I was raising my finger, John, because part of that policy statement from the Riksbank is also that the underlying inflation is running higher than anticipated. And that's been sort of the same quote central banks have been giving us for 2 years now. So hopefully they get into the real world soon. And it just got me thinking, because you had the CEO of the Norway Sovereign Wealth Fund was out yesterday, the oil fund. He was out saying actually that the transition to less carbon intensive economies and more renewable energy would be a significant driver of higher inflation in the long term. So we are in a new world, a new era, and it doesn't seem like the market or central banks are yet to sort of commit to that new world.
And specifically for the Scandis, the issue of their currency aggravating the inflation there has been for the cycle. It peaked at above 12% and at above 10% core in the case of Sweden. So very ugly inflation numbers there. I'm surprised they're not bringing up the currency impact a bit more prominently. They need a larger domestic bond market to keep savings and to keep money in Sweden rather than flowing abroad. So it is what it is. And these Scandinavian currencies have been extremely weak. All right, rest of the week, it's that Bank of Japan meeting that really is the focus. But we do have the preliminary Eurozone figures, including for Germany, up on Friday for CPI, and then the March U.S. PCE inflation as well. So stay tuned for all of that, and we, of course, will be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at @SaxoMarketCall or by email marketcall@saxobank.com.